Hello, Microbial Nation, and welcome to another episode of The Microbe Moment. In today's episode, I am joined by Jennifer Welsh, a freelance science writer and the owner of the domain microbelover.com. Today, she will talk to us about what it means to be a science writer during the pandemic and the resources that any aspiring freelance writer needs in order to survive in the industry. Jennifer, thanks so much for joining us today. Let's start by having you tell us a little bit about yourself.
Great. Yeah, my name is Jennifer Welsh, and I'm a freelance science writer. So I write, and I've done some editing, done a lot of management. I work mostly on websites online, so writing for news journalistically mostly at this point. And my background is coming from research. My parents are researchers, so I did a lot of work in their labs 3 years and kind of just developed this love of science.
What kind of research do your parents do?
They're cancer researchers. So my mom researches breast cancer and vitamin D, and my stepdad researches prostate cancer.
Oh, interesting. So did they meet because they both studied cancer?
Yeah. So this is my stepdad. So complicated story. But they were working together at the University of Ottawa and then moved to a research organization in upstate New York, and both of them were working there. And, you know, it's kind of a family secret as to when they actually got together.
Okay, I'll ask no more. So you host a website called Microbe Lover, correct?
Yeah, I mean, that's my personal website. It has all my contact information and links to my previous articles and all of that.
Yeah. So I'm super curious how you got the domain name Microbe Lover and how that all came to be.
Yeah. So I think it started with my Gmail. So my Gmail is microbelover@gmail.com. So that happened, I think, about 15 years ago. So I really fell in love. So I had done a lot of the cancer research. I was working in my parents' labs at the University of Notre Dame when I was a student there. And I took a class specifically on HIV and AIDS. I think it was called AIDS. And I just fell in love with it. It was like my favorite class, learning all about virus, viral replication, genetics, like every piece of the virus and how like elegant and intricate and incredible they are. And I was just like blown away, fell in love with it, became like my must study subject. So it was a time when Gmail just started. This was 2006, I think, when I graduated from college. And Gmail had just started. This is my first email that I've ever picked out myself, because I had just had like my university email and that was it. And so I had to think of the best screen name I could ever think of. And it was Microbe Lover. And I have had that as my Gmail ever since. So it's been, you know, 15 years now that I've taken the moniker and I've used it everywhere. So just in keeping with that theme, I'm Microbe Lover on Twitter, on Instagram. I don't think I have the TikTok handle naturally. I had to grab the URL just to keep it in the family.
Yeah, might as well, right? It's a great domain name for sure. So I wonder, is HIV like your favorite microbe, or do you have a different favorite microbe now?
I don't want to say I have a favorite one right now. So my career has been a little winding, because I did undergrad and I had worked in the labs and I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And so I wasn't sure about getting a PhD. I wasn't sure about what I wanted to do next, except that I wanted to follow a boy to California. And so I ended up in San Francisco and I was working. I got, you know, really lucky to get a gig working at an antiviral drug discovery startup where we were working on all kinds of stuff. So things like chikungunya and like VEV, West Nile, like all kinds of different viruses. You know, I got exposed to all kinds of different stuff there. And what I really got exposed to was science writing and creation of materials around communicating science. So I did a lot of data analysis. I did a lot of presentations for them and creating that material. And I discovered, you know, science blogs, and they really started blowing up around that time. So I, out of nowhere, was like, what? Who writes this? How do you get this job? This sounds like a cool job. And it seems like something I want to do. And I think my instincts were right, that I didn't necessarily want to spend you know, a long time in the lab studying one protein or one gene and trying to learn about one specific mechanism. Right. I'd never really thought about writing. I was always like a B student in English classes. Like, I was never good at writing. And I actually went to elementary school in French because I was in Canada. So,
oh, wow.
I was always bad at spelling, and I'm still bad at spelling. Like, I'm not good at English.
Yeah. That's what spell check is for now.
Yeah, I've never really thought about writing as a thing. And so it was more, I just had not known that this was a job that you could have. And it just really intrigued me.
Yeah. So I'm curious on, I think like right now, it seems to me anyways, that science communication is becoming a really big buzzword. And I was wondering if you could talk about what science communication sort of means to you and why you chose to do science communication in journalism as opposed to just journalism.
Yeah. I was lucky enough to find science communication focused grad program. So it's a master's certificate at that point. I think it might be a master's now, but it's at the University of California, Santa Cruz. And they are specifically catered to people who are coming out of labs, who have done hands-on lab research. Like, it's a requirement to get in.
So what were the classes like at Santa Cruz? Like, what were some of the classes that you had to take?
There was like 4 semesters. One of the things I loved about the program is the focus on the internships. So before I even started classes, I was writing press releases for Stanford University Medical Center.
Oh,
so
cool.
Like, they just put you in and had you start go.
Yeah, there's no better way to learn for sure.
So I got to do that. And then we started classes, and then you start learning about how like local news writing is done. You learn, you know, how to write a lead and, you know, how to interview sources and all of that stuff. So that's kind of the first introduction.
What was your biggest like misconception about science communication when you first started?
Range of ways that you can communicate science, and that they need people to be producing content. So it's not just something like what I've done for the last 10 years, which is writing for websites in a journalistic way or a bloggy way. There's, you know, writing company sites, there's writing documentation, there's writing white papers, there's writing press releases and alumni magazines and all of those kind of marketing materials. You can write scripts for YouTube videos. You can obviously do research for podcasts. You can, you know, there's a lot of ways to use these skills in communicating and also, you know, simplifying and helping other people understand science that is not just straight, I created this news article for the web.
Yeah. So on the flip side of that question, I guess, is what do you think is the biggest myth that people have about what you do?
I think they think I know everything. Like, I've written so many different things about so many different topics in the last, you know, 11 years that I've been doing this, and I can't remember half of them. And you don't have to be an expert. I think that's something else, that you are not going to know everything about the topics you're writing about. You have to be able to dive in pretty quickly and get a really good grasp of the general conversation around something. And that's a skill that's really important.
Yeah. So thinking back to like all the different things that you've done, is there a particular piece that sticks out as being your favorite?
There is a project that was my favorite. Mm-hmm. So in my last job, I was running a tech website. And one of the things, we were piloting new topic areas. And so I was really excited that I got to make my microbe website for once. And it was not Microbe Lover. It was called Inviziverse, the invisible universe of microbes all around you. And so we got to just, I think we were able to work on it for about 6 months. But we dove into the ways that microbes, viruses, fungi, parasites, all contribute both in positive and negative ways to our environment, to our health, to, you know, every part of the world.
So you're a freelance writer. Mm-hmm. So why did you choose freelance as opposed to like getting a job at a company?
So I had staff jobs up until March of last year when everybody lost their job. So I had several internships before I got like my first real full-time employment job. So I had interned at I mentioned Stanford. Then I interned at the local newspaper, the Santa Cruz Sentinels. And then I interned at Wired. And then I interned at The Scientist. And then I interned at Discover Magazine. And then I interned at Live Science, where I finally got hired to be a staff writer. So I actually did not think that I was built to freelance and to work on my own, but I've really been enjoying it. I really love the idea that I can do different projects all the time when I'm freelancing. So I can not just write about different topics, but do different kinds of stories, different lengths of stories, different types of work, be it journalistic or something more on the content or marketing side that has a different purpose and a different style and a different flow to the actual creation of the work.
What is your best tool or resource for managing your time and juggling all the projects that you have?
Yeah, so I'm a big proponent of Airtable, and I have some templates on my website that you mentioned, Microblubber. Airtable program is just, it's like a group of tools for like a spreadsheet on steroids, basically something that's more of a database to deal with text, but can be presented like a spreadsheet. And there's other tools like this as well.
Mm-hmm. So would you say it's similar to like Monday or Trello? Have you used those platforms?
Yeah. So what I like about the Airtable is that you have a view that's like Trello, the Kanban view, where you have the cards and they all have like little stacks. But you also can look at it like a spreadsheet, or you can look at it like a gallery of images or entries like cards. Like you can view it as several, or you can look at it on a calendar even if you have a date in there. So I like that you have the multiple opportunities to see it, your information in different ways.
What did you find to be like most challenging kind of transitioning into a freelance science communication role?
I think building up that network is really challenging. So I had some built-in networks from when I was in New York. There were a lot of local science writers groups, and there's people I've met through conferences and through alumni groups. And it was still difficult to know who was doing what and who I could pitch to and what their rules are and all of that. So really kind of managing that network and getting back in touch with a lot of people that I hadn't touched base with in a while, because I had been more in a management role at my last position. So, you know, just reaching out and putting myself out there is hard.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's a huge part of it for sure. So you keep using the word pitching, and I was wondering if you could just explain that a little bit and what goes behind that process.
Well, pitching is when you come up with an idea and you try to convince somebody else that it's worth paying you money for. So it's something that happens a lot more in like the journalistic writing. So if you see a new paper that's interesting, or you hear about some work that's being done that you think is worth writing about, that's kind of the process. And so you have to think about what the headline would be, what kind of images would go with it, what sources you would use to flesh out the information, if it's papers, if it's interviewing people, and then kind of think about how you could form a story out of it instead of it just being a topic. That's, I think, one of the most important parts of pitching, is making sure that you found an actual story. The things that you have to think about is what kind of magazine is going to run this, who covers those topics. You have to think about how long this article is going to be. Is it just covering one paper and one experiment, or is it going to cover multiple experiments and how they've kind of developed over time? And that might be a longer feature story. If you're thinking about a longer story, you have to think about who are the characters in that story. So is there somebody who did the research and that person is going to be talked about in the article? And are they willing to be interviewed? That's another big question. So those are all kind of parts of the pitch. And you want to get it all in, but you also want it to be short enough that they can read it in about a minute or two and not have to take, you know, their coffee break to read it.
Mm-hmm. So I'm curious on if you put your whole day into like a pie chart and you section it out and 100%, like how much, what percentage of your day is pitching versus writing versus managing and juggling projects versus sending emails to potential employers?
Yeah. So I think I do about 3 to 4 hours of deep work on a regular day. Like that's my goal. That's work that I'm able to bill for, basically, is my rule of thumb. So I'm getting paid for that project. And then, you know, probably another 3 hours in a given day, I'm juggling email, looking for new opportunities, messaging people, like managing stuff, sending invoices, looking for new ideas, signing up for new alerts. Like, it's a lot of stuff that is in the admin file for me. And I'm still, you know, I think one of the things, the misconceptions about freelancing is that at some point you're done looking for new clients. Cause you're like, that's something that I'm really kind of facing the music on, that I'm never going to be done sending pitch emails and sending new ideas out to people and sending, hey, this is who I am and what I do. Can I help you in any way? Emails.
Mm-hmm. So I've heard you mention like Twitter and Facebook a couple times as far as resources to find places to freelance or to get job opportunities. Would you say that's what you use more often than anything else, is like Twitter and Facebook over job boards? Or
so, yeah, Facebook I think is pretty good. I'm in a couple of pretty good groups there, and Twitter definitely. But you can save yourself the work by just signing up for a couple of the opportunity newsletters. There's Sonia's Opportunities of the Week newsletter, is a really good one. There's a couple of other ones. Study Hall is a good organization that's more focused on community and networking, but they also have an opportunities newsletter that's pretty thorough. So
I know you've said like you love working from home, but do you find there's any drawbacks to working from home?
There are drawbacks that I lean into. So the flexibility of having my family near me and being able to snuggle my cats or take a nap, like a lot of people might have a problem with that being so close, but having done this, having worked at home for, you know, I think 3 or 4 years at this point, I've developed a lot of systems, not just like online systems for tracking stuff, but, you know, for making myself focus, like just different ways that you can lean in and figure out what works for you. Nobody cares what I'm working on right now or when I get that work done, as long as it's there by the deadline. And that has been something that's been really freeing for me. I think I mentioned I've been like realizing more and more that there is a lot of need for this kind, any kind of science writing and science communication, and a lot of different ways that you can do it. Even if you don't, say, want to do fast turnaround embargoed news stories about the latest research, you don't have to.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess like as you go through, do you see science communication or science writing moving in a different direction than where you thought it will? Like, where do you think the field will be in 5-10 years from now?
What I'm really excited about is seeing the development and the investment in these preprint servers. They've always been around, but how it has changed with the pandemic, how just research information sharing, you know, just the process of doing it has changed. And that's going to have a drastic impact on how we cover science. A lot of science news that you write and you read is stuff that has been specifically fed through press releases, through journals. You know, a lot of people who are on the news beat of science, they get all of their ideas and all of the new stuff fed through these channels of, you know, you get an embargoed story from the journal Science, because they send out this list every week of all of the journal articles that they're being released the next week. And then you get the same researchers and they do the same interview 10 times and you get the same information on 10 different news channels. And it's basically the same story. So I'm really interested to see how that's going to change.
So are you excited by the prospect of having more diversity in what's out there in science news, or the prospect of more transparency on how the data is collected in the scientific method?
As a writer, it's much more interesting to dive into a topic and have more time to investigate, to talk to more diverse sources about it, to take different angles on new research, not like the angle that's being fed through the press release. So personally, I'm interested in that. And then, you know, I can see how stories develop as well with the transparency, you know, like I can see that this data originally said this, and then, you know, maybe it got some feedback from other community members. So they went back and tweaked it and changed the story or changed the, or added more experiments or, you know, whatever else the process has created. So I know, I think it's really interesting to look at the comments on preprints and to see, you know, just the conversation, get a better idea of the bigger conversation that's happening around certain topics that maybe you don't see if you're just reading a press release in a paper and talking to two researchers.
Yeah. Yeah. I would definitely say as someone who's published in like the academic peer reviewed journals, it's a way different process being involved in it than like when you read the final version, and it's almost like a different paper entirely.
Yeah, exactly. And so seeing kind of the raw thoughts is really interesting just as a person.
Yeah, definitely. So is there anything else you'd like to share regarding your journey or science communication? Or
I think we covered a lot of it. I have a lot of resources on my site as well that you can link to, obviously, for finding, you know, all the pitching newsletters I mentioned, the different Facebook groups I'm in, and other kind of resources. I feel like there is so much out there that can help you on a journey if this is something that you want to link into. You don't have to go to grad school. You don't have to go to journalism school. You don't have to, you know, be a journalist, you know, by training to write about science journalism, to be a science journalist. You don't have to be a scientist to be a science journalist. Like, it goes both ways. There are people from so many diverse backgrounds that, and yeah, you don't have to write just about the topic you got your PhD in either. So, you know, there's just so much flexibility in it. And I feel like anybody could do it. I really do.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have one final question. Once COVID is over, what do you hope to do most?
This is silly of me, but I really love going to conferences and like talking to other people and just learning random stuff. Conferences are great if you're a journalist, because you can, especially scientific conferences, like you can go for free and there'll always be like events and happy hours and like free meals. Like, it's pretty great. Like, yeah, free coffee. Like, they always have a room for journalists to go into. And so you find so many interesting stories too that aren't being pushed through the embargo process, through the press release process, like things that have not been covered, interesting researchers doing interesting work that maybe other people aren't covering. So I'm excited to do that again, because it's something I haven't done in quite a while because I was in more management roles.
Yeah, I know. I miss conferences too, especially the happy hours. Like, nothing's better than a happy hour for networking, I gotta say. Well, thank you so much for being on our show and talking to us about science communication and journalism.
Yeah, thank you. I'm happy to answer any questions anyone has.
Hello, Microbial Nation. It's me again, your microbe-obsessed host, Tess.
And John, and we need your help.
That's right. You see, we want to improve your listener experience and provide higher quality audio for all of you to listen to and enjoy. With your help, we're looking to raise enough money to get some higher quality microphones, an audio mixer, and some editing equipment.
If you'd like to help, there's a link you can follow in our show notes. Or you can find a little coffee cup at the bottom of our homepage at microbigals.com. Really, every little bit helps. Up until now, we've been able to provide all our content for free, and we want to keep providing you with ad-free and high-quality microbe facts, interviews, and history snippets. Any amount is welcome, and we are so grateful for you and your support. As always, thanks for listening.
Keep your microbes happy and healthy, and we'll see you next time. Bye!
Bye!
Well, Microbial Nation, we hope you enjoyed this interview with Jennifer Welsh. And if you'd like to learn more about Jennifer Welsh, you can follow her on Twitter at MicrobeLover. That's MicrobeLover. Or you can find her and all of her resources on her little corner of the internet at MicrobeLover.com. If you enjoyed today's show, please share it with a friend. If you are an aspiring science writer or have a micro moment you'd like to share, let us know by sending us an email at microbigales@gmail.com or hit us up on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or Reddit at microbigales. That's microbigales. We hope you continue listening, and we hope you keep your microbes happy. Until next time, bye.